Though just 31 years old, Justin Nicholson has already worn many hats in thoroughbred racing. He is the founder and president of the racing partnership 99 North Racing Stable, a member of the board of directors of HorsePack, the NTRA's Federal Political Action Committee, and he is a breeder. He's now added a new and ambitious project to his resume. He is the head of EquestriCon, which is, well, a racing festival slash convention meant to bring together all segments of the industry to celebrate the sport and help move it forward. Nicholson is our guest on this week's Thoroughbred Daily News podcast. But first, this commercial from our sponsor, TaylorMade.
And here it is! The 37-year wait is over! American Pharoah is finally the one! American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown!
Over the past four decades, TaylorMade has risen from a small boarding operation to the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing. Here's Hall of Fame trainer, Jerry Hollendorfer.
TaylorMade sales follow many horses that are training at the racetrack. And they are particularly adept at evaluating mares and placing them with a proper stallion after their racing careers are over. They are very straightforward and are also experts on confirmation of younger weanlings and yearlings.
My name is Tia Andrini, and I am from San Mateo, California. I've been doing business with TaylorMade for about a year now, and it's been one great experience after another. It started with my first TaylorMade venture when I bought an interest in the filly Catherine Sophia, which ultimately landed me 3 weeks later in the middle of the winner's circle of the 2016 Kentucky Oaks with her. The TaylorMade team is a group of truly outstanding individuals. They are knowledgeable, professional, and completely customer service driven. To me, the TaylorMade name epitomizes the term trusted advisor. That is exactly what they are, and I am very proud to be associated and doing business with them.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
This is Bill Finley with this week's TDN podcast, and we're talking to Justin Nicholson, the co-founder of EquestriCon, which will take place August 13, 14, and 15 in Saratoga. And Justin, as I tried to summarize what EquestriCon is, I had a hard time putting my finger on it. Maybe that's because it is so many things. So let's just go straight to the source. What is EquestriCon?
That's a great question to ask, and it's funny. One of the things we're kind of working on right now is doing our best to come up with the right kind of, combination of words, phrases, and graphics and everything we can put out to summarize a really big thing in a very small space. So what we're working on right now is, and what the event is as a whole, is a fan festival. It's meant to celebrate racing's current fans and bring in new ones, but really it's an opportunity for the industry to kind of put its best foot forward and present those fans with kind of a thank you and an experience that brings them into racing in a way that they haven't before. It's everything from a trade show with around 70 or 80 exhibitors. It's activities and exhibits. We have, racing arcade. We have an antiques roadshow style, like appraisal setup, all kinds of fan activities if you want to bring memorabilia in. And then autograph signings with legends of the game, the Triple Crown winning jockeys of the 70s. And then a robust panel schedule. I think we have about 24 panels covering really anything that you can think of in the industry, from handicapping to, stories of racing photography or big wins or whatever else. And then some of the more in-depth stuff, like how to market the industry effectively and different international viewpoints on racing and that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of things to a lot of people, and we think if you come, really no matter what your interest level or knowledge of racing, you're going to find something that you'll have fun with.
And Justin, how, when, where, why did you come up with this idea?
The team behind it, it's me and two others. My wife, Catherine Sharp, is one of the others, and then our friend Dan Torgman, who's with America's Best Racing. And I think you have three young people. I mean, we're from, late 20s to mid-30s, and we're all kind of invested in the game. For Katie and me, it's as owner breeders. I mean, I've been around it for basically my entire life. For Dan, it was more on the kind of media side and promotional side of the game. But, we all want racing to be around and thriving for a long, long time. And I think, you get enough people together who share that mission, ideas just kind of start to formulate. And, you know, Dan threw it out one day as just something he's seen in other industries, which clearly, you know, fan conventions are all over the place, like Comic-Con and those kinds of things. He threw it out there, and I think he thought we would tell him he was crazy, and instead he got our minds going. So you know, about a year and a half later from the first discussions, here we sit.
Well, that's very nice to see that young people are not only involved in the game, but, you know, have this passion for it. And you already kind of touched upon this, but for you to succeed both business-wise in all your endeavors outside of EquestriCon, and also just as a person who likes horse racing, you very much want to see it be successful in the year 2062. And, you know, as someone who is only 31 years old, is that something that you do worry about? Do you worry about where is this game headed and what's it going to be like when, you know, I'm in my rocking chair on my front porch and playing with my grandchildren?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think if there's a trend to the stuff I've done in racing in the last few years between, you know, starting 90 North, the partnership, which we've scaled down at this point because we've just got a lot going on with other things like this. And, you know, joining the horse pack board and those kinds of things. I mean, every effort I'm trying to undertake has to do with, you know, helping the industry grow, thrive, and continue on. We have right now, I think, 8 to 10 broodmares. We have, you know, at any time up to 10 to 15 horses in training. You know, I guess one could say it's selfish to want it to continue, but equally I think of it as something that's much bigger than any of us individually. We all really care about the industry and the sport. We all have our individual passions for it. And yeah, I mean, on the, you know, certainly if nothing else, we have a strong perception to, you know, battle to fight, because there's, you know, how often do we see in mainstream media and so forth, we get our 2 or 3 days a year of attention. And otherwise, if we're in the news, it's probably not a good thing. So what we want to do is start to, you know, be a part of that movement that continues to branch out and give us a little broader audience and hopefully some mainstream appeal. And, you know, I think the convention route and the fan route is another, you know, area to do that on top of the ways the industry is trying to reach the handicappers and those kinds of folks, you know, directly.
Okay, so now I totally get it. And you come up with this idea, EquestriCon, and, you know, I'm sure you wouldn't mind it being a fabulous success from a business standpoint, but I do very much am impressed by your motivation as well to help the sport. You described it in a macro sense, but in a micro sense, how does EquestriCon help complete that goal? How does this create new racing fans? How does it take racing fans that may go to the track twice a year and get them to go to the track 10 times a year?
Yeah, I think you've summarized well what we're aiming to do on that level, as you say. You know, our mission was that whatever level of interest you come in with, you leave a little bit more interested. And the way we do that, I think there are a couple different hooks. I mean, one is for anybody who's going in to do some of these panels, it's going to be, you know, from an educational perspective. You know, we have ways to grow your understanding of handicapping or, you know, I think there's a fan base that's not always easily reachable, which is people who love coming to the track to take pictures and being around the animals. So that's another, you know, angle we're focusing on. You know, and then just connecting the social and networking, you know, elements of this, I think are kind of, you know, to our end, in our minds, unlimited. I mean, we have probably anywhere from 150 to 300 kind of influencers in the industry, whether, you know, owner, breeder, trainer types to executives to media. I mean, they're going to just be there, whether they're participating in specific things or kind of, you know, or exhibitors or whatever else. So you're going to have a chance to kind of touch and feel the industry as a whole in a way that I don't think is easy to duplicate anywhere else. Obviously the big race days, you know, you get all those kinds of people there, but everybody's kind of in their own area for the day, or they've got their group that they're with, whatever else. This is, you know, we're hoping we're going to have, you know, a couple thousand racing fans over the course of the weekend with, like I said, several hundred, you know, industry leaders and influencers. And then, you know, things like the autograph signings and so forth. I mean, if you're a fan and you get a chance to start to meet some of the athletes you're cheering on a regular basis, that's another way, you know, hopefully you get hooked and you keep coming back and you appreciate being around them even more. So it's an all out assault in our opinion, in a good way, obviously, but to try to get everybody a chance to to feel a little bit closer to the sport than they do when they walk in.
And Justin, this is a very ambitious project. You're not talking about setting up a couple card tables and having a couple guys sign autographs and then a 10-minute handicapping seminar. You're talking about 3 days. You're talking about dozens of panels and everything like that. How hard has it been to pull this off? How much work has gone into it?
It's a lot of work. I mean, obviously, when you start with something like this, I think one of the questions we get asked a lot is, why doesn't this exist already? And obviously, there have certainly been efforts in the past to try to put some kind of, you know, a lot of like trade show kinds of things and some handicapping convention kind of stuff. I mean, the scope of what we're doing, I don't believe has been tried before. And certainly for the three of us, it's been really a full-time job, you know, not very close to it. But it's the thing that I'm really thrilled about is I feel like, you know, on the whole, when we've been calling, you know, people of all kinds in the industry, the response is, look, this is a great opportunity for us to try this new thing or to give away this item or to whatever it is. I mean, people want to actually market, and this is a way to reach people that I don't think they've had before. And there are a lot of people in racing in marketing departments or in whatever role who I think are looking for a blank canvas that they can try to shape a little bit. And obviously, a first year event that's customer facing, I mean, I don't think there's a better opportunity. So we've been very happy with the amount of industry support. I think we have between sponsors, exhibitors, partners, I think we have over 100 organizations involved.
That's tremendous.
So yeah, it's been, you know, pounding the pavement, but we've been very, very happy and very, you know, excited about all the people we've got on board.
There's much more to come with Justin Nicholson, but first this message from our sponsor, TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Harvard of Grace.
7-10, you want to get 10 million, Hunter, right here, ready to get out of the mat. That's the way now, 10. 10-10, here, ready to get out of the mat, ready to get 10. Bruce, right here, $10 million even.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus. But don't take our word for it. Here's what some of our most satisfied customers have to say.
This is Brian Kahn, Los Angeles, California. I've been associated with, worked for, and been a client of TaylorMade and the TaylorMade family for close to 30 years now. Had great success with them. They've always been transparent and honest, and I always felt I was getting the right end of the deal with them. Highly recommend their services from boarding, public sales, private sales. I've used all. All have been a success and a pleasure to deal with.
Here's longtime TaylorMade client Rick Porter of Fox Hill Farms, owner of numerous champions and Grade 1 winners, such as 2011 Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace.
I've been doing business with TaylorMade for over 20 years. Everyone knows they are the best sellers at auction, but they have also done great work for me in the private market. They have an unbelievable network that can help you buy or sell privately in a very professional and transparent way. I wish I had these guys working for me when I was in the car business.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
And welcome back. We're talking to Justin Nicholson, one of the co-founders of the Equestricon Conference, which is coming up this August 13th, 14th, and 15th in Saratoga. And Justin, you have mentioned this is for the fan, and you're going to do a lot of things. There's going to be a lot of industry people there, but this is for the fan. What do you think you'd be more successful at, creating new fans or, again, getting people who are marginal fans even more interested in the sport? I know they're probably both goals of yours, but which do you think you'll have better success at?
I would think there's probably, you know, more of a hold on people who have at least a baseline interest. That said, I mean, for the person who's coming in because they live in Saratoga and they've got a couple kids and nothing to do on Monday or Tuesday morning, you know, there's a ton there. Like I said, there's, you know, we'll have a racing arcade with a little virtual reality experience. We're having like a name a racehorse contest. We're going to put up one of the horses that we bred, you know, a design your own silks app we're putting together. I mean, there's a lot of like just fun, engaging activities that, you know, for, you know, $25, you can come in and have 3 hours of stuff to do. That said, I mean, you know, the kind of highest level of the programming is probably if you include in it the panel side of things, then that, but for the most part, is gonna reach out to people who have that baseline of interest that they want to kind of grow. And I think, look, if we if if there's a possibly a bit of a void out there, I mean, that I think we can fill. I think it's, you know, celebrating the fans that the sport has. I mean, obviously, marketing, understandably, will always be geared primarily toward bringing new people in, and we want that very much. But I think one of the things we can always do is to make sure that our current customers or the people who are, you know, $2 a day handicappers will come out and, you know, feel more comfortable taking that next step, whether it's ownership or whether it's, you know, having the education to feel comfortable playing the races, you know, a little more often, whatever it is. I mean, those are people we really hope to reach.
And Justin, you've mentioned marketing many times, and I think one of the problems racing, one of the problems that racing faces is that who doesn't like Saratoga? Who doesn't like the Breeders' Cup? Who doesn't like Del Mar? Who doesn't like the Triple Crown races? But that's perhaps 1% of our sport. The other 99% is a Thursday afternoon at Finger Lakes with nobody in the stands and, you know, unfortunately too many 5-horse fields. You're a young guy, you're innovative, you're a hustler, it seems like. If you're a marketer, how does racing solve that problem?
It's a very good question, and obviously one that a lot of people are spending a lot of time and resources on trying to figure out. I mean, I think, you know, certainly one of the approaches a lot of people are taking is to actually try to make the big days bigger, which, as you say, is still 1% of the sport. But I get the idea of, look, when you do have everybody's attention, you want to make the most of it. But no, I mean, I think, you know, there's probably a reasonable question as to whether on a given day, maybe we just have too much racing. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of product out there. I think, you know, it's hard to determine that one thing that's going to make that happen. But if I had to say anything, I think it's about, you know, connecting people to the athletes and trainers who are there every day. I mean, it's, you know, the jockeys and trainers are an ongoing story, and they're riding on Wednesday the same way they're riding on Derby Saturday. And also, I think just getting people like you know, we're approaching this is a little more educated. I mean, it's a lot more, you're a lot more likely to go out again and take your friends out or whatever else if you, you know, have a sense of what you're doing, if you can teach others, if you can, you know, feel confident, whether it is handicapping or whether it's just, you know, knowing your way around the racetrack or even, you know, for the people who can do it, buying a 2% interest in a horse if that's the way to go. Those things, I mean, we've had, you know, we had a horse break his maiden for our partnership on a Thursday at Belmont. We had 30 people in the winner's circle. So, you know, each of those kinds of things are ways to get people attached to a storyline that doesn't always play out on you know, Derby Day or Belmont Day. Mm-hmm.
Now, Saratoga is an obvious place to have Equestricon. Was it the only choice? And if you are successful and Equestricon lives for hopefully many, many years to come, might it ever hit the road? Do you see it ever being at Del Mar or Gulfstream or someplace else?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly tossed around a few options. It's one of those things when you make a decision the first year, you have to kind of game it out a little bit, a few different ways. But no, I mean, I think the second we went to the venue and saw we were going to be able to get in there, you know, for the summer. I mean, obviously we didn't know for sure that we'd get a venue at Saratoga in the middle of August. But once we saw that we could line that all up, I mean, I think our eyes all got pretty big and we knew exactly where we wanted to be. And that community has been great. You know, the mayor was out for our launch and actually we had a little press event there earlier this week and had you know, good turnout from media and press and some of our sponsors and all that kind of stuff. So no, Saratoga is a racing town and they love the sport more, you know, as much or more than anybody else in the country. And that's, to me, that's where we belong, certainly, to get this thing going. And as you said, I mean, I think, certainly we can envision where down the line this could, you know, move around. I don't know that necessarily it's that, you know, the big one moves around or whether we do smaller events other places that, you know, I mean, fortunately our network that has allowed us to pull this event together is something hopefully we can call on, you know, other ways if there's a right time to do it and a right place to do it. So we'll try to be nimble and we'll kind of let the, you know, the success hopefully will come as it comes and we'll take our time with it. But we'll see how we do.
Now, this was totally unavoidable, but some of the sessions actually take place during racing hours at Saratoga. You do have a Tuesday all to yourself, but with Saratoga racing 6 days a week, you would almost have to go up against the live racing product. Do you worry about that at all, that you might have some dead periods or, you know, that you would be pulling people away from the races themselves? Again, I know there's nothing you could do about it, but, you know, a fan convention is somewhat competitive. Competing with the actual racing.
Yeah, no, and we were very, very you know, aware of that from the beginning. For one, fortunately, not, you know, we've been able to work with Naira to kind of get them on board and in the space. They have some panelists speaking with us, and it's a, you know, a relationship we've kind of made sure to keep as close as we can all throughout the season to stay in touch with how everything was developing. Our Sunday programming is really events around town, so it's in the morning, and it's some things like a handicapping seminar and that kind of stuff. So we actually hope Sunday we are sending people essentially to the racetrack with more information and knowledge than they would have had otherwise. And then Monday, what we tried to do was make the emphasis of our programming more a focus on one of our big cares, which is aftercare, one of our most important priorities. If there's something that may have a little less overlap with the racing, it's mixing some of the aftercare and photography and some of those kinds of angles. You know, we tried to be aware of that. But equally, I mean, we have a tournament handicapping seminar Monday morning. We're sending hopefully those people over to the races to play those, you know, one of those low roller tournaments that they usually have on Mondays. So, you know, it's one of those, again, as you said, it is unavoidable, but we've done kind of the best we can to make sure that we're working with and not against, you know, an organization we are very much in support of, and we appreciate, you know, the partnership that we've had.
Well, let's stay on that subject of aftercare, because you look down, you go to your website and you look down the list and the plans and the schedule and everything. It's clear that aftercare is a big part of Equestricon. It's one of the central themes, as a matter of fact. And we all know that some people in the industry, not so much now as badly as in the past, really want to bury their heads in the sand when it comes to this issue and what happens to these horses and athletes that are beloved when they're racing, but what happens to them once they are done racing if they're not fortunate enough to go on to be sires or broodmares. So why was it so important to you to make this such a big part of Equestricon?
I just think, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, the last several years, I think there's been more and more of an eye turned toward, you know, this kind of thing. My family's been in the industry, you know, basically my whole life. So I kind of have seen the progression of where aftercare, you know, where its role has been in the industry and how it's changed. We ourselves, my wife and I, moved to Pennsylvania about 5 years ago or so, and we live kind of in hunt country and that kind of area. So, you know, a lot of horses here were off the track thoroughbreds who are now out doing, you know, fox hunts and everything else. And it really became clear to us between, you know, fox hunting, show jumping, and all of those kinds of disciplines, there are always, you know, or certainly very close to always, places that you can find for them where they have a very soft landing and a new career. And so, in fact, with our retired horses, when we retire them, we have a relationship with somebody here, a farm. They will retrain them and figure out their discipline, whether it's jumping or fox hunting, et cetera. And I just think it's really kind of incumbent upon, you know, anybody owning racehorses to have at least some kind of a plan in place for what happens when their horse is done racing. It's not always possible. I know sometimes, you know, the ownership changes and a horse gets claimed or sold or whatever else. And, you know, you do your best to keep track of them. But I think to the extent that anybody has control over it, you know, it's kind of on all of us to keep an eye. And we do have... the TAA is named as our official charity partner. They're doing tremendous work. We actually are going to have the largest collection of aftercare organizations, at least in their history, in one place over the course of the convention. I think we have 26 coming in over the 3 days. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge focus for us because it's what we do with our own and what we believe, you know, is incumbent upon us as an industry.
Mm-hmm. And Justin, on that same subject, you know, you're only 31 years old and, you know, you're that coveted audience. You're already in racing, but, you know, everybody, whether it's horse racing or any industry, covets. I don't know. Are you technically a millennial at 31? I'm not quite sure what the definition is anymore or whatever, but you're certainly in a younger demographic. And I was wondering, and I take this to my own children. My daughter is 16 years old and she's appalled by the whipping of horses. Just thinks it's terrible. And I wonder, the 30-year-olds have a very different view on how human beings treat the animal than maybe the 75-year-olds who grew up in a very different time. Do you think some of these issues, like whipping, like breakdowns, the problems with aftercare, is that hurting racing among people of your age group?
I, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that there's a non-zero number of people out there that are in our age group and in general that feel that there are issues here regarding the protection of these animals and what they're asked to do and how they're treated and all of that. And in my personal experience, the perception and the reality are way apart. But the reality is, I think that our job as an industry, that's where we need to be transparent, not opaque. I mean, to me, if every person you can bring to the backside and show how much, the grooms and hot walkers and trainers take care of their horses and on a day-to-day basis and the kind of life they live, that's the best weapon, in my opinion, in the kind of perception battle, is actually bringing people into it as best we can. We have on Sunday these kind of experiences we're doing with Equestricon. We have Gary Contessa is doing a tour of his barn, so that'll give people a chance to kind of go in the backstretch. I think we'll have about 30 to 50 people for that. Phasic Tipton is doing a tour around the auction grounds, so kind of see what the sales are like and all of that. I think giving people the experiences that show what's really happening on a day-to-day basis, in large part, is the best thing we can do. And I wish I could say we were 100% there, but we're a lot of the way there. And I think if you look at the kind of worst aspect of pretty much any industry, you'd find things you don't like. But we've got to do our best to show that the majority of it is not like that.
Absolutely. Now, you're still 7-some-odd weeks away from opening day or the post time for Equestricon. But what's your sense so far from ticket sales, from the buzz, from the media coverage? This is anytime you do something new and different, there is a risk involved. So how good are you feeling about things so far from what you've seen from, again, ticket sales, buzz, attention you're getting, et cetera?
Yeah, no, we're very happy with it. I mean, I think one of the statistics we've kind of enjoyed the most is seeing that I think we have registrations from over 30 states now. So obviously, for a first year event, we're getting people who are either in Saratoga and adding this to their itinerary or traveling during that time. As you said, we're on a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Really, Monday, Tuesday are our main convention days. Sundays, these kind of add-on things. So we're not at the spot, one of the peak Saratoga moments there. We're kind of trying to catch the people who are, just leaving and get them to stick around an extra day or two, or coming in on Wednesday for the week and get them there a day or two earlier. We've kind of been hitting our projections throughout. And, I think the buzz has been great. We went up to Saratoga, I guess, up this week, between the press and the media and then just the turnout of people interested in asking questions. Very happy. It seems like, downtown is ready for us. We're hearing a lot on Broadway. The shops and stores all know about it and getting excited about it. We're pretty confident we're going to have, a couple thousand people over the couple days there. And, it's not going to feel empty. That much I'll say with a lot of confidence. There'll be a lot going on, and I think everybody's going to have a good time.
The dates are August 13, 14, and 15. Equestricon will take place in the Saratoga Springs City Center. We're going to learn more about Equestricon, but first, this message from TaylorMade.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16th.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it, wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap.
And welcome back. We're talking to Justin Nicholson, the co-founder of Equestricon, on this week's TDN podcast with Bill Finley. And Justin, a lot of handicapping events involved in this. You're bringing in some heavy hitters. Michael Baychuk and Jonathan Kitchen are two guys that have done very well on the handicapping circuit. There are going to be a lot of seminars handicapping-wise, more so for the beginner, the novice, more so for the pro, a little bit of both. Who's going to benefit from these? What can somebody learn from this?
I think it's a little bit of everything. For example, I know on Sunday morning we're doing actually a free for anybody who purchases any level of ticket. They can sign up for the first 300 people that sign up, get in a handicapping seminar, and that's with it includes, I think, Baychuk and Kinchin and a couple others. Capital OTB is helping us out, and I think they're going to broadcast that, from what I understand. And basically, that's about five or six kind of experts going through some of their picks for the day and using that to go into some of the angles they use. So it'll have both an immediate application and also some broader perspective just on handicapping turf races, two-year-old races, and that kind of thing. We have a panel on advanced handicapping tools and products, so that's for people who are more versed in the game. But there's a lot more data-driven stuff out there, a lot of different technology that's starting to kind of move into the marketplace. So the people who really want to take the time and turn it into a science can do that. And then some other groups of people with different perspectives. We have a women's handicapping panel. I know off the top of my head, I know Gabby Gaudette's on there, who's likely to be a Naira person this summer. I know she was last year. People coming at it with different perspectives. Obviously, women are thought of more as having that kind of paddock eye, but these are all people who are very sharp on paper, and we have a lot to learn from them as well. So within the handicapping world, like everything else, there's going to be something for every level and something for every kind of interest.
One of the seminars that is near and dear to my heart is the one where you examine how coverage of racing has evolved. And in many regards, it has disappeared from the mainstream media, particularly newspapers, and it is now limited to industry publications. How much of a problem is this for racing, or is this just the way things are in 2017, which is a very different world than, say, 2000 or not 2000 and something, but maybe 1987?
Obviously there are a lot of changes in media across many industries and sports and so forth. But I don't think anybody in the industry is excited to see, coverage decreasing. I saw when it was the LA Times that dropped their coverage not long ago, and Mel Brooks was tweeting about it and saying, this is terrible to see. So there's definitely a sentiment that racing needs to be in those pages and it's starting to disappear. I think we're fighting the battle to keep in the mainstream, and obviously it's been great. I don't know how much everybody's seen of it, but the NBC Sports coverage of Ascot has been fantastic, I thought, all week. They picked up the ITV feed and Nick Luck kind of supplementing it, and I'm hopeful that will only continue to expand. I think as long as racing keeps moving into, high def and the kinds of things that we need to do to keep up with other industries, the sport's beautiful to watch. The people are interesting. The storylines are interesting. Our job is just to try to make sure that there are things that hook people more than a few days a year.
Okay, now this is a perfect question for somebody in your age group. I'm sure you're very involved with social media. Does racing take its best advantage of social media? Is there more that could be done with it?
Funny enough, actually, we'll actually have a panel on that topic as well. So you're setting us up well. I think on the whole, I would say our use of Twitter has been pretty good. I think the community is very active on Twitter. One of the things you find, and it's kind of the nature of the people who care most about racing. Racing, as I describe it, is a sport of disagreement. Every race is 10 people who disagree about whose horse is best, and every bettor who puts money in the pool is disagreeing with everybody else. So you've got a lot of active conversation, a lot of discussion. You've got people disagreeing on almost everything, but that's what moves arguments forward over the course of time. So I think on Twitter there's a big presence. I think, Instagram and Facebook are a little more image heavy, and that's again where, we like the idea of pushing photography and racing and helping people find their eye, because I think the beauty of the sport is really something you can capture. If you go out there with a bit of a knowledge of it and the right equipment, you can make racing look pretty fantastic. So there are a lot of ways that it can be captured in a meaningful way and spread, and it means all the world to be able to have pictures of people out at the track, even if it's five people posting to Facebook and their 200 friends seeing that they're having a good time out there. That's the best marketing there is these days. So.
Sure.
We can encourage that. I think that's tremendous.
All right. Well, we've covered just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to all the things going on at EquestriCon. So, Justin, is there any one particular panel or seminar that you're most looking forward to? Do you think that is really going to be something very popular with the people that come and attend?
Yeah, there's a wide range, but honestly, I can already see from the way the numbers are coming in, the one that looks like it may well be the most popular when all is said and done is our Race Colors panel. We have Tom Durkin, Larry Kalmus, Travis Stone, and Dave Rodman all attending. They're going to go over some of their favorite calls, so I'm sure that'll include some, you know, Belmont Preakness, that kind of stuff, or derbies, or even just, you know, a race on a Thursday that they particularly remember. And those guys were and are all very gifted at what they do, and they're usually fixtures of the game that are there for 20, 30 years or more. So it's so ingrained in the culture of the sport, what race callers do. And I have every expectation that's going to be one of the most popular panels and probably one of the most fun to attend.
I'm sure it will. Now, you've been immersed in this. You probably haven't had a chance to take a deep breath. But have you thought about EquestriCon 2018? How can you make this bigger, better, and keep the whole concept growing?
I think primarily what happens from year one to year two of almost anything is you start to figure out what's working best and what's not working as well, and then you start to emphasize what's working best. So we have, as you've kind of mentioned, we've thrown a lot at this in terms of different angles for people. We're hoping obviously that every single one works, but if we see that something's hitting more than something else, we'll emphasize it in year two. But no, right now, I mean, as you said, it's we're not coming up for air that often because we're 6-7 weeks out, and there's a lot to get done. So we'll have a more earnest discussion of year two as we get closer or finish year one.
All right. Well, for now, we'll worry about year one. Justin, this is a tremendous idea. I'm sure it's going to be a big success. I'm sure you're working your tail off. Congratulations for coming up for something new and interesting for the industry. And I hope everybody listening in will make their way to Saratoga for those 3 days for EquestriCon. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our sponsor, TaylorMade. We'll catch up to you soon on the TDN podcast.